This is official. Hi, my name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 64, 65, 60 something.
It's in the 60s.
It's in the 60s. If anybody knows, put it in the chat box. We are going to have a question to answer. We are going to talk about the Enneagram. Hopefully you guys listened to the podcast a few weeks ago, but first.
And they may have questions too, so.
And you guys, if you have questions, please.
You guys take priority over Enneagram stuff.
Absolutely.
So,
and maybe your question is about Enneagram, yeah. Or maybe it has nothing to do with Enneagram. It's all good in the hood, peck of wood.
Yeah, where'd that one come from?
I don't know.
What movie?
I don't know.
Everything's come from a movie. So I want to talk about the conference real quick. I realized I totally dropped the ball and didn't tell you guys the day before.
Oh,
about
yeah.
Our, I totally was like, oh, I didn't do the Team Zen thing. So
okay. We'll get you back next year.
Yeah. So let me say this. Our Todd and I are really excited for this year because we kind of sat down and figured out what is the message that we really want to offer to our conference community. And we have had, like, when we first started out, one of our desires, or at least one of my desires, was to meet some of the people I respected in the industry and people's work who really affected me. And I feel like we've had the opportunity to have a lot of those people at our conference. And two of the people that for Todd and I right now, their work affects us is Rachel Simmons' work and Tony Porter's work. Rachel Simmons has been writing about girls and women for, I don't know, the last 10 years. I feel like Curse of the Good Girl, her second book, was the reason I started a women's circle. She's been very important to me. And her recent book, Enough As She is excellent if you are raising girls. She works with girls on an everyday basis. She talks to girls in high school, in middle school. She works with women. She is so engaged in their lives, and she is kept up to date on everything, including social media. She works with Rosalind Wiseman a lot, who we had at the conference a few years ago. So we're excited to have Rachel Simmons, Tony Porter.
Tony Porter, I first came across Tony. He did a TED Talk, I think, 9 years ago. And he's a good storyteller, and it was about healthy masculinity. And he created an organization called Call to Men, which is all about equality and preventing gender-based violence.
Uh-huh. He's an activist.
He's a total activist. And he has this kind of, although he's probably only 10 years older than me, he has this kind of grandfather Yoda-ish energy. He's very confident, but sweet and soft.
He can drop bombs without being
in your face about it. So, and we've done a few shows where we talk about Tony. We played clips from him. We obviously play clips on this week's podcast of both Tony and Rachel. That's kind of the setup for it. So it's about raising healthy young women, raising healthy young men. We're doing a transgender thing in the middle of the day on Saturday.
Well, it's not just a transgender thing. There's a panel for transgender and non-binary because we realize, even though we want to be really gender focused this year, not everybody identifies with one gender or another. You know, there's a lot of in between. There's a lot of gender fluidity, and also helping people understand that gender and sexuality are two different things. I actually had a women's circle last night, and this conversation came up again, just about people struggle with what's the difference. And so we really want, we have some people from our community who are going to be on the panel whose children have transitioned. One of my friend's sons going to be on the panel. Sounds like we have a woman who she focuses and writes about transgender and non-binary. So it's going to be educational and how we can become better allies and support systems for these families and these kids, and not walk around with myths and misunderstandings about what transgender and non-binary means. The generation, our children's generation, get this. Mm-hmm. So we're the ones who have to catch up. Mm-hmm. My daughter gets this. My daughters get this because they know
they
people.
Don't have to unlearn what they've learned.
They understand.
They just learn.
So we have parents have to catch up. And then real quickly, obviously, Duffy is going to be on, or he's going to have an hour or two to talk about anxiety. So for teenage anxiety, and he's just going to answer questions. So you guys bring your questions. You know Duffy. Well, you'll know him better after we have him on the Zen Talk. He's awesome. And he'll be on our show next week. And then Todd and I are going to talk about sex ed, but not just like sex ed. We're going to talk about, again, catching up with this with this generation, understanding sexual fluidity, understanding consent, understanding what it is we need to share with our kids. And we're calling it sex ed for grownups because we have to get comfortable with this first and have some basic information so we can talk to our kids and allow them to teach us. So we're going to talk about that. And then there'll be more. We always add to the conference as we go along. We meet people. But this year, and then also midday on Saturday, you get to sit with Tony or Rachel and do like a small group breakout. So, and then Todd and I are both doing a pre-conference workshop.
So bring your husband if you have one.
And if you plan to go to the pre-conference workshop, I'm do get your ticket because I have a smaller room than last time, so I can't expand it. Yeah. Last year I went from 50 to 75 and I have to stay at 50. Yeah. So just get your ticket early so you can go.
When you were talking about transgender, it made me think of something. There's a movie called Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Arnold's like this FBI agent, or he's this police officer, and he pretends to be a kindergarten teacher. And there's this funny scene where a boy raises his hand out of nowhere and says, "A boy has a penis, a girl has a vagina." Uh-huh. And everybody laughed, and it was really funny. Because I think Arnold's next line is, "Thanks for the tea."
Right.
It's a good Arnold. What's interesting about that is that's not true.
That's not always the case, right.
And back when Kindergarten Cop came out, like, of course that's true.
Right.
And now that line no longer holds true.
Correct.
It's crazy.
We have to keep, and here's the thing. People fight this and they'll say it shouldn't be this way. And the reason things are changing is because people are talking about it so much and it's giving our kids ideas. This has always been the way. And people have been suffering because they have been unable to talk about the experience that they have. And now we get an opportunity to allow people to share their truth. And we have to expand our definitions. It doesn't mean that men and women don't exist. I identify as a woman. Todd identifies as a man. You know, majority of you identify as your, you know, given sex. That's called cisgender. But not everybody does. And it's not our job to say they're not doing it right. Let's listen. And, you know, I've experienced in, you know, too many families now, meaning that this is part of our future, and we have to be willing to be supportive and educated and be an ally so we can support our children and also support our children's friends.
What's funny is I just had a conversation. I was in Ohio last week and I was having a conversation about transgender and all that. And my colleague said, you know, I just know the basics, but at least I know the basics. It's interesting how uninformed 100%. People are, and it's just, there's a lot of work.
Well, like I said, people have a hard time differentiating between gender and sexuality.
He didn't understand. I said,
two different things.
And he's like, what do you mean? And I probably said that 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the same thing.
Right.
Anyways.
Thus why we need a transgender non-binary panel.
Yes.
And non-binary just means that you find yourself somewhere in the gray.
Yeah.
That you don't identify strongly one way or the other, that you feel yourself to be both. And that's very common now too with this generation.
So here's what we're going to do.
Okay. Question?
There's a question, and then we're going to open it up to any of you that have a question that or want to talk about the Enneagram. We have a few pieces that we're willing to share about the Enneagram mm-hmm. in case nobody has anything, but I always prefer people to have something. So anyways,
can I use your glasses for a second?
My cool dude sunglasses?
Yeah, thank you. Okay. So the question today, I'm going to summarize it a little bit, but it's about one of our team's end members. Her son is 10 years old. He started fifth grade last week, and she's very aware this is a transition period, and he's more tired and doesn't get as many electronics. And so she knows that part of this is because of this. But he goes to a Waldorf school, and but what she has struggled with is he has difficulty occupying his time at home. He is an only child. I pick him up from school. I'm home with him after school. Usually he stays after school with other kids to play, but, you know, and some days he has activities, but on the other days he doesn't. He comes home and he says to me, "What are we going to do, Mom?" As if I'm the activities director. Mm. I always say the cruise director. That's always my language. This is not a new thing for him to ask me. He always has. When I make suggestion, he refuses them all. He says why they're not good ideas, complains that he's outgrown his toys. He has nothing to do. We're not laughing at them, by the way. It's too familiar.
Oh, we've all been there.
Right? She said, "I will literally remove myself from the situation and he will just follow me around. This is so incredibly frustrating because it feels like I'm a hostage to him. I have addressed most of his concerns, encouraged him, provided activities. I've offered things to do with him. So, you know, et cetera. He does have a best friend that lives around, so they can do that occasionally. And you know, blah, blah, blah. I think this is about him developing the skill set to find ways to experience downtime without friends or electronics, or maybe it's something else. And then this is an important part. She says, his dad works from home, so I'm considering dropping him off after school and running my errands then, just to shift the energy for a few days. Because maybe me being so available is creating this situation. We just had this conversation. So she said, and here's the important part. Here's, it gets into the emotion. All these parts are important. But she said, I feel sad because it feels like I'm not enough or good enough, or I've failed in parenting. Anger comes up for me because I feel as if I've co-created this situation. I regret that he was ever exposed to Minecraft, Zelda. It has caused me so much conflict and heartache. And it's kept him, impeded him from finding something to do on his own. I feel sad about him being overly dependent. I'm also angry at my son for being such a contrarian. I tell myself stories about his unmet potential as I project into the future. And she also feels bad that he's an only child. So this feels so layered to me. I want some peace in our home and I would love some perspective. So how many of you can relate to feeling like you're the cruise director at your home sometimes?
How many people think that they can relate that they're sometimes a bad parent?
Sure. Well, that you drop the ball. You know what the hardest thing is when you feel like you dropped the ball like a long time ago. You know, like if I just would have done this 5 years ago, I wouldn't be where I am now, which is, by the way, a made up story. So there's a bunch of pieces here. Number one, let's just start with the a child who comes home and basically comes to you and says, what are we going to do? She has already gone the route of creating things for him to do, you know, offered suggestions, played with him, dropped her own work to be with him. And what I would suggest is that it's time for a conversation about the issue rather than trying to solve his problem. This is what I call, we're trying to like put a Band-Aid on the issue at the surface level. Like, oh, if I could just give him something to do, this wouldn't happen anymore. It's not true. There's something going on below. It's based in his belief system that it's her job to keep him entertained. And it's also, his belief system is that if he's not constantly doing something, then somehow he's not spending his time well. And he may have more, you know, energy than other kids. Like some kids really don't want to move as much, or they don't need as much, or they like to be alone. And there's some kids who are more extroverted, who really want someone to, you know, to move with and talk with. So she's got to have the conversation, or, you know, have the conversation with him in a good time, like maybe on a Saturday afternoon when you're about to go, you know, you have an hour before you're going to go to a movie and do something together. So you can, you know, have something to join you back together after it's over. And
so you're stealing all my good ideas.
Oh, really?
Well,
okay.
I was going to come up with that one. First of all, this is not your problem to fix.
No.
This is nuanced, like every other thing we ever talk about. But yeah, I would say have the conversation not at 3:30 after school, but have the conversation when you're in a good place. Kathy's point, you're going to a movie on a Saturday, like, oh, by the way, you know, our challenges recently about after school, like, let's think about that. Like, let's get, how do we bring a new idea to this? I think it's a really good
idea. Can I stop you there before you go on to the next thing?
As long as it's not going to be critical of what I just said.
Not critical. That's perfect. And I think a layer below it, which is, you know, we've been having these challenges and the layer below it is, do you believe that it's my job to keep you busy? And if I ever made you think that, I'm sorry because, and again, your tone is kind. This is not like you better rethink
it. How you say this is much more important than the words that you say.
Correct. Like you got to get to the core level of his belief system about what your job is as a parent, because it does not help our kids to constantly keep them busy. Even though we've been told at certain places along the way, keep your kid busy. And if they're not busy, like boredom is a great thing. And boredom doesn't always mean they're going to go to their room and vape. Like we've got to find a nuanced place in between where, you know, so many parents are afraid of boredom because then they think their kids will pick up bad habits. That's possible.
We actually got into a debate with John Duffy on next Tuesday's podcast.
About this very issue.
He said something, we agree with 99% of what he says, and we actually probably agree with what he said, but what he was saying is it's important to keep your kids active, and I think it's because he deals with a lot of kids who are inactive and all that, and I just, you know, we kind of had a very kind debate about boredom also has value.
Basically, what he works with teenagers who are coming to his office, who don't have any sports, who aren't interested in anything, who then are happen to be getting into trouble. And so he's seeing a certain population where he's like, oh, if they only had a team, or if they only had something they believed in or enjoyed. But that can take many different variants, like forcing your kid into a certain sport, because then you're like, then they'll stay healthy. If they don't like it, if it doesn't mean anything to them, it won't have the effect. Mm-hmm. Like, I really still believe in allowing our kids to choose. And sometimes for one kid, it's a baseball team. And for another kid, it's having a good camera so they can go take pictures. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look the same for every kid. And we have to be able to hear them. So before you go back to your thing, go to that question of, I really want us to have a good relationship, and I don't want us to be in conflict about you thinking that it's my job to keep you busy because I want to support you in finding things for you.
Well, what's weird is there will be a point at some time in the future where you would beg for your son to say, what are we going to do?
Sure.
Because he's going to find his friends, or he's going to find his way. And then all of a sudden he doesn't even ask you these questions. That's what's funny is, like, the one thing that drives us nuts about our kids is also going to be the thing that we miss the most.
Right. It's just so out of balance right now that it's hard to think about that as a positive. But no, you're right. You're right.
So a few other things. This is obviously getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. Like, this mom has an uncomfortable feeling because she thinks it's her job to make sure that her fifth grader is entertained at all times. And my first question is that true? Is that your job? And I would say, from an objective point of view, no, that's his job. It's your job to support him, but your job is not to make sure that he's entertained all the time. And he needs to get comfortable with that uncomfortable feeling too, but it's not going to happen unless she gets uncomfortable with this uncomfortable feeling as well. It's like, your value as a parent is not predicated upon whether or not you can make sure your fifth grader is constantly entertained.
Well, and the layer of that feeling of being uncomfortable is most likely, and she said this, and I talk to a lot of people who have only children who feel this way, there is an under layer of guilt about not having siblings, mm-hmm. even if it was completely her choice, yep. Even if it was something she knew that was right for her. Our society tells us that that is somehow not okay or cruel, or you have to give a child a sibling. And there's absolutely no truth to that. You also have to question all these things about what people say about only children. Four of my best friends are only children, and they are the most different people in the world. They all have a lot of, they're all people who can talk to adults, and they have some of those common traits because they were only children, but they are not the same people and they don't have the same issues. So don't lump your only child into this pot of this is how they're going to turn out, mm-hmm. because, there are many gifts to being an only child too. Mm-hmm. Like, don't forget.
Well, and it reminds me of, we did a few, Zen talks on Byron Katie's The Work, uh-huh. and we can use The Work. That's her, it's four questions in a turnaround. We can use that about every single question that any of us ever ask on a Zen talk or anything else. So there's nothing special about this question, but the whole idea of her judging herself because she only has one kid, was that a mistake? Is that true? Of course it's not true, mm-hmm. because that's what you had, and right. This is the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
And I would encourage you to, and maybe I'll put in the show notes as a resource, of the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, and just refamiliarizing ourselves with Katie's work, because I think that there may be some value that comes out of it.
Exactly, because if you can get comfortable with that or alleviate that guilt, it'll be easier for you to let go of feeling bad about him being bored. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's why I'm always like, I can give you a bunch of tips at the surface level, but it's going to come back in another way.
Yeah.
You got to go deeper into what does he believe? What do you believe? And then work up from there, and you're going to see a different surface because you've questioned your belief systems. And so your work is to question, did you mess up by letting him do Minecraft? My kids did Minecraft. I think a lot of people here probably had their kids do Minecraft. I know a lot of people on Team Zen, their kids do Fortnite, and their kids do a lot of things like this. This is called living in this day and age. Even if you wouldn't have allowed your son to have it in your house, he probably would have tried it somewhere else. So we can't, like, keep certain things away from our kids, what we can do is we can teach them how to find balance in it or manage it or step away from it. And it's not always easy. Sometimes you run into roadblocks where it's like, I'm not quite sure which direction to go.
So two things. One is Sarah made some comments and I'm going to read them just for the people that are listening after the fact. And then I have a comment. So what Sarah says, I'm always struggling with feeling like a bad parent with my only child. I'm an only child, and there's definitely a stigma about who we are, which is interesting because that's not familiar to me.
Oh yeah. Hear it all the time. Well, like I said, four of my best friends are only children.
Okay.
So they've all told me and talked to me about
that they're spoiled or something, that people think that they're spoiled.
There's two things. Either one, that they missed out on something.
Uh-huh.
Or number two, let me say that a different way, that people have told them they've missed out on something. And number two, that people have belief systems about them before meeting them.
Well, I will kind of be vulnerable and share a little of my own judgments. I have a cousin who I love. His name is Eric. And he is an only child. And I always remember being really jealous going to his house because he had every single Star Wars figure that was available.
That's what it's all about, to get the Star Wars figures.
I loved going to his house, though, because they were all there.
Yeah.
Even Snaggletooth and Hammerhead.
Did you play with them?
Yes, of course.
Did you feed him turkey and red wine so you could play with it alone? Like in that Seinfeld episode?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. So the other thing is, and then we'll move on. She said, maybe I should bail to change the energy.
Yes.
I think that's an absolutely wonderful idea.
Bail. And make it a routine. Like, this is something that Todd and I just talked about because this weekend we were all supposed to go to camp together, family camp. And my kids started school about 2.5 weeks ago and it's actually been fairly okay, but there's been enough nervous energy and enough new beginning anxiety that I've been very enmeshed with my children and I've been carrying around a lot of their feelings and feeling very overwhelmed by what they feel and thinking I need to fix it. I'm a two. That's what I do. And I couldn't even see how enmeshed with them I was. And then I got sick, shocking. So they had to go to camp without me. And it totally sucked. I was like, how will you all manage? Mm-hmm. How will you live without me?
Yeah.
And so they left and I was sick all the days because I said, I'm going to come tomorrow. And I was still sick. And then I said, I'm going to come tomorrow and I was still sick. But what I noticed happened over the weekend is I told Todd it was like Velcro, being on Velcroed, where I could detach from them and then I could feel myself again. And I realized that all of their stuff is not my stuff. I couldn't do a thing about it anyway. I was just carrying around all their emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's a very common experience for me as Kathy, but as a two, as an INFP, that's just part of my makeup. But I couldn't even see this one. I was like lost in it. So I'm so thankful. I don't like being sick. You can still hear it, but I'm so thankful that I was able to separate because this week has been so much better and nothing changed except me.
Nothing changed, but everything changed.
But everything changed. So.
I saved the chat. So Sarah had a lot of good comments and they'll be in the show notes of this Zen Talk. So just so you know that they're there. So if somebody's listening and they did not listen to our podcast on the basics of the Enneagram, it might be a good time to go back and review that before you listen to us talk about it. Cause we're not going to start with the beginning. Cause okay. I feel like our podcast was the beginning.
No, I have two things that I want to share. And if anyone pops up with a question, I will stop and go to you. So mm-hmm.
I have some things too.
Okay. So this is what I want to share about the types. There's certain questions that have come up about the Enneagram that I wanted to help people clarify. And the first thing is about wings. You're doing your Enneagram and you end up with one number that's the highest, and a lot of people were thinking that their second number was their wing. So they'd be like, oh, I'm a three with a six wing. That's not how it works.
And I could easily understand why you thought that.
Of course. You know, especially if you haven't, like, that's a very common misperception. Thus, there's a whole website about it. The wing is always to the right or left of you. Even if you didn't rate very high in one of those wings, it's always to the right or left. And you have to figure out which one of those feels more like you. So for example, if you like, I'll just use mine. If I'm a two, which is a helper, and then the one is more of like principled, purposeful, self-controlled, perfectionistic. And a three is more about excelling, being driven, being adaptable. And that is much more like me. Like I if I'm going to do something, I don't want to be a behind the scenes person. I'm going to do it. You know, like when I, you know, when I love yoga, I have to become the yoga teacher. When I love some topic, I have to share the book with everyone. I'm much more front and center.
So you have to be the boss.
I do. I mean, and that's fine. Like, that's not something I'm...
You're the CEO of Zen Parenting Radio.
Right. So me, I'm a helper with an achiever wing. I'm not a helper with a behind the scenes wing. So you have to figure that part out for yourself and just read about both of them. But the wing is on one or two sides of you. The close, the indistinct patterns. So some people wrote on Facebook that they were high in lots of different numbers, like that they had a chart that were there, like it was almost divided equally between like five numbers. Very common. And there's often two reasons why that this happens. They said there's two explanations. Again, I'm just taking this from the experts. They said the first reason this may happen is, and this is so interesting, the person may have engaged in therapy or spiritual development for so many years and has resolved a lot of the conflicts of their personality. So they become so
evolved,
aware and self-aware of what they do that they've been able to find themselves in every number. So you still in your, you know, it's still in your best interest, or if you really want to use the Enneagram, if there's one that's like 19%, but the others are 18, still try and go with that 19%. But if you're all over the place, it could be because you have been willing to expand your awareness. The other thing, the other reason it could happen, the second explanation for a close distribution of scores is that this person may not have spent any time in personal development and therefore lacks self-knowledge. Mm. So they're just like answering questions just like kind of on the fly, and then they're you know, showing up everywhere. So you have to figure out for you if you're all, if you're like even around the board, do you feel like it's because you're always trying to be self-aware, or is it because you don't like to be self-aware and you kind of want to find yourself blending in to everybody? It says the personality type that has the most difficulty in this area is the nine, because the nine has problems seeing themselves because their sense of self is relatively undefined. Yes. So they have developed their capacity to be unselfconscious, receptive to others. Remember, nine is the harmony creator. And so a lot of times nines misidentify as twos. Male nines identify themselves as fives. So a lot of times, and nines tend to identify strongly with the person that they live with. So if I was a nine and Todd was a three, I may believe I'm a three because I'm always trying to understand Todd. So these are just some kind of fun ways. This is why, and we'll keep talking about it on, you know, on the Team Zen page and also in Zen Talks a little bit, because the Enneagram is an exploration. It's not a personality test of this is who I am and I'm done. You constantly explore it. And I thought this was really interesting. And so because I know we're all different numbers, these are belief systems of each of the numbers. Ones believe that imperfections exist and it's up to them to change things. Mm-hmm. Twos believe that others need their love and support. Is this surprising?
Yes.
We just talked about this. I'm like, everyone needs me. Everyone always needs me. And that's all in my head.
Yeah, we don't, we do need you.
He was just about to say, we don't need you.
We do need you, but not to the same degree.
Don't that hurt you, my two heart.
But not to the same degree that you think we need you.
Exactly. Threes
are perfect. Let's move on.
Threes believe that they need to be applauded and successful.
Yes.
Fours believe that they are both deficient and unique and both need to be seen. Fives believe that the world is dangerous and they need to understand it better. Sixes believe that the world is not safe and that they need to make allies to stay safe. Sevens believe that they need to plan for a happy future. I just think Rob Bell every time I look at that. Eight believes it's up to them to be a powerful force in the world. Yeah. That's the challenger. Nines believe they should suppress dangerous feelings and let others take the lead. So it just, it's kind of fun to like, if any of those really rang true to you, it's like, that, you know, you look at that number again and just kind of play with it. So that's some Enneagram stuff if anybody has.
Sure. We're going to go to Kelsey then we'll try to answer Sarah's question, which she typed in.
Right.
Hang on a second, Kelsey. Let me, takes a second to unmute you. There you go. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. I'm so glad to be back on the talks. It's been a crazy summer. And I just want to say we're in our new house in Maine.
Yay! I love the wood. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. So it's just great. So one thing I was thinking about with people when taking the test, sometimes I know, like when I was in a supervision group, as a therapist intern, we would talk about our clients' potential Enneagram types. And mm-hmm. sometimes what would happen is we would think, well, maybe they're this number, but they're under a lot of stress. Mm. So you guys haven't talked, I don't think you talked yet about how each point has an integration point. Like I'm a one, so the integration point is moving towards seven and incorporating seven pieces, mm-hmm. like enjoying life. Mm-hmm. And the stress point is four, which is like where all my feelings come up and I'm misunderstood. And so if I'm super stressed, I'm going to look like a four.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Somebody taking the test and they're in so much stressful time, they might look like their stress point more than their actual type.
Yeah, I love that.
When I read, and
I think on the Enneagram Institute website, you can get, it'll show you the directions.
Yes. Yes. When I read the book, The Road Back to You, from what I remember, and it's been a little while, when, to your point, like, so I'm a three, and when I feel stressed, I move towards a number. And then when I feel, I think it's like the opposite, when you're the opposite of stress, when you're excited or life is in flow, then you gear towards a different number.
Hmm.
Does that ring a bell, Kelsey?
That's what she said. You're so just saying what she said.
I thought she said stress, but I didn't hear the other
she
side
heard the
of
other.
It.
She said she goes toward a seven. If she, didn't yeah. you say that?
Each type has a stress point and an integration point.
Integration. That's the one that I missed. Okay.
Was that in, I didn't hear, there was an audio lag. So were you talking about the Ian's book, The Road Back to You?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I really like his podcast Typology.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really good. And then also the Enneagram Institute website has this thing you can sign up for once you figure out your type or you just want to, or you thinking, you know, you think you know it. It's called the Ennea Thought. Mm-hmm. And every day, it's free. Every day, I've been doing this for like 7 years. I get an email with a little blurb of something to think about, to work on, or just to keep in my mind for my type for that day.
It's
a really nice thing to wake up to. It's really nice reminders. Yeah.
I'm excited about that. Did you write that down?
No, but I can go back on the podcast. What's it called?
Enneagram. What's the website? It's on the Institute site?
It's on the Enneagram Institute, and it's called Ennea Thought.
Ennea Thought.
Awesome. So
thank you, Kelsey, because I don't know my stress or my integration point yet. I'm still like only in second grade with my Enneagram. Like I'm still learning as I go along. So,
but just for clarification, if you're a two, your stress point is this one thing. It's the same for all twos.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure it's not like you're a two and your integration is a seven, but the other two is a six. Like that's the way it's like a universal thing.
Is that the case, Kelsey? It's universal for numbers? Like everyone, their stress point is four?
No. Everybody's different. See, you know that cool diagram?
Yeah.
With all the lines?
Yeah.
I'll have to look in my book. And
so just for clarification, but on that diagram, because I know the one you're referring to, you Google it and you see a million different images. The twos, when they're at stress, they always go to this. So it's not like because Kathy's one type of two, she'll go to one number.
So that's and some, correct. That's correct.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The one goes to seven and four, but a two goes to like different number, other numbers.
So when we did, yeah, so every number goes to a different stress point and the other word, what's the other word? Integration. So what's interesting about this is Kathy and I did an hour podcast on it last Tuesday. And you're like, oh, okay, I get it. It's these nine numbers. And there's so many layers to this that I don't even know yet. People make careers based out of Enneagram studies. And just to kind of repeat what I said on the podcast is it's helped me develop a better sense of empathy because I walk through this world. I'm like, how come you can't just see the world through my lens? And when I learned about the Enneagram, I'm like, oh, that person's a seven. They can't see the world through my lens. So I knew it before, but the understanding of the Enneagram deeply enhanced my ability to understand others.
And to decrease your expectation that everybody should be like you.
Right.
And as a parent, that's so important that you look at your children and you say, well, I can keep myself busy. Why can't you? It's not an even argument. Mm-hmm. It's not a fair assessment. You know, like, well, I liked high school. Why don't you? I liked college. Like, I have a lot of clients right now who have sent their children to college this year. And they keep saying things like, well, my daughter's struggling so much at college, but I loved college. So I don't know what's wrong with them. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with them. They're not going to have the same experience you did. And it could be because of your personality or because of what school's like now. But this belief system that because we experience something, everybody else should, is not the case. And the Enneagram is the best, to me, one of the most obvious indicators.
So Sarah asks, can you discuss more about how to use this for acceptance and healing of ourselves? I'm a two with a one wing. Or no, I'm a two wing one. I don't know if that means she's a two.
Yeah, she's a two, and then her wing is one.
I definitely like who I am as a two.
I definitely think that I have spent my life.
I definitely think that I've spent my life feeling like who I am as a two is a problem. Mm. I've never found a way to be a useful helper, at least not in my career. I did lack self-knowledge but I think I have a lot of who I am squashed out of me. I've been told I need a thicker skin all my life.
So have I. My whole life, people have said, you're sensitive, you're dramatic, you know, you cry a lot. Peg, I cry a lot like you cry a lot. Peg cries a lot.
There are a bunch of criers
and
over there.
Maddie cries a lot. A lot of people in my family do. Skylar cries a lot. And this is not a problem. This is not something we need to fix. This is something we need to understand. And that's the first belief system that we have to question, is this idea that who I am is wrong and that I should be somebody else. What we have to do is find our sense of self over time. It's not like a done deal. It's not like I'm a two, I'm done. It's like constantly, you know, pay attention to what feels right to us and then pull the goodness out of it. And realize that not only are we not supposed to be like someone else, but like, let me go back. Sarah, the person who told you, if it be your mother or anybody else, that you're too sensitive and that there's something wrong with you, were a completely different number. They didn't get you. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand you. They didn't know people like you existed. Mm-hmm. You made them uncomfortable. You made them feel their feelings because that's what helpers do. Mm-hmm. They could possibly feel all that was going on in you and they didn't want to. So they said, quit feeling that so I don't have to feel it. You don't have to carry that story anymore.
That's their story.
That's their story. And this is why, and again, it's not just about twos, about any number. You're a number one, you're a one, and people are like, oh my God, you're so perfectionistic. You're so like, you need everything to be right. Well, as Todd said on the show, thank God we have people like that. Mm-hmm. There are pilots, there are engineers. They're the ones who like figure something out for us. And like they can look at it from that perspective of, is everything going to fit accordingly? I'm not like that. So I need twos in my life. There's nothing wrong with them. And same with achievers and harm, you know, like we all belong. And it's kind of like anything with empathy or with understanding, is we have to offer that. So then people offer it to us. And most important, we have to offer it to ourselves. I mean, if there's one thing that, and I know I can't just make, you know, wave a magic wand, but if I could, I'd wave a magic wand and help everybody accept who they are.
Because there's no way you're going to accept anybody else.
Exactly.
Unless you first accept your own, I'm going to say not flaws, but your shadow.
Your personality type, your sense of self,
yeah.
Your number, your, you know, Myers-Briggs thing. Like, I don't care how you say it. And that with every dark, there is light, and with every light, there is dark, and nobody's better than anybody, and you're special, but no more special than anybody. I mean, Todd and I say the most repetitious things. what we've tried to do with Zen Parenting and everything is to say it in a million different ways.
Yeah. Basically, we're saying the same thing over
and over. Over and over.
You are enough.
You are enough.
Because all of us are ego, and that's just the identification with the ego. Our ego is trying to convince us that we're not.
If you're here, you're supposed to be here, mm-hmm. and you're needed in this time and place. And it doesn't mean you have to have a fancy career or a job or be famous. It just means you need to be here. So.
So before, I know Nikki has a question, not regarding the Enneagram, but I want to share a few things that I found that I didn't share on the podcast last week, and they're just kind of random. This is back from the guy who wrote The Road Back to You, which is kind of the guy that I learned some of this from. First one is, people do not change from one basic personality type to another.
We talked about that on the show.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then I'll move on. The description of the personality types are universal and apply equally to males and females, since no type is inherently masculine or feminine.
That's a good one.
Not everything in the description of your basic type will apply to you all the time, because you fluctuate constantly among healthy, average, and unhealthy traits. So that's what Kelsey was saying. And that's how I was taught about it. There's healthy, average, and unhealthy that make up your personality type. The Enneagram uses numbers to designate each of these types because numbers are value neutral. They imply the whole range of attitudes and behaviors of each type without specifying anything either positive or negative. Unlike the labels used in psychiatry, numbers provide an unbiased shorthand way of indicating a lot about a person without being pejorative.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Three more. The numerical ranking of the types is not significant. A large number is no better than a small number. It is not better to be a 9 than a 2 because 9 is a bigger number. No type is inherently better or worse than any other. While all personality types have unique assets and liabilities, some types are often considered to be more desirable than others in any given cultural group. And we talked about this because threes are the achievers, and we live in a country of achievers. Like, we exalt people who succeed, and that's warped. That's not the way it ought to be, but that's the way that it is. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Okay. Furthermore, for one reason or another, you may not be happy being a particular type. Like, I wanted to be a 9, but no matter how many tests I take, I always find myself going back
but
to the
further
three.
We get from that time, don't you feel so different than a 9?
Well, I have a new understanding of 9s. So the immature 9 is somebody who just lets life pass them by.
They're very passive.
So I don't want to be a 9, but when I heard the name of the 9 is the peacemaker, I'm like, oh, that's got to be me. Because even when I was in college and my stupid drunk friends would get into fights with people from town, and like there'd be 10 of my buddies beating up 2 of these other poor kids, I would always come to the defense of these 2 poor kids. Like, I was a peacemaker between my parents. I've always been really good at that. And we are all 9 of these types.
Correct.
So anyways, you may not be happy about, blah, blah, blah. You may feel that your type is handicapped in some way. As you learn more about all the types, you'll see that just as each has unique capacities, each has different limitations. If some types are more esteemed in Western society than others, it's because of the qualities that society rewards, not because of any superior value of those types. The ideal is to become your best self, not to imitate the assets of another type.
And so let's just say that sentence, not only is that Enneagram, but it is not in your best interest to imitate being other people. It's a lot healthier to be yourself in the world and feel good about that. And that is, when I say healthier, that's not the word I want to use, because that sounds like something we have to do. You can give more to the world by being yourself rather than trying to imitate somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's like such an Oprah thing. She always talks about that the greatest compliment she's ever given. I'll actually post this video on the Zen Talk page. Or what is it called? Team Zen page. That she says the greatest compliment people ever give her is they say things like, you helped me be more myself because you were willing to be yourself on TV for 20 years. And you helped me be myself. And she's like, there's no greater compliment. Mm. She goes, I don't care about all the cars and all the stuff.
Kelsey has some resources that's going to be in the chat, just so you guys know. We're just scraping the surface with this, but we just thought that it's a really wonderful tool to have in our toolbox of understanding. Like, I think we might have all of our, now here's the one question I have, because we're all going to be together. Me, Kathy, Peggy, our family's going to be together in December. And we're thinking of all of us taking the test.
Yeah.
So we can kind of have fun with each other and deeper and more deeply understand. But as grownups, I was taught that you need to take the test as if you're a 22-year-old person, mm-hmm. because that's when your inherent drives and motivations.
Peggy's just hearing that part, that we're all going to take the test together.
The most inherent motivations happen when you're in your early to mid 20s. My question is, if I ask a 12-year-old to take the test, like how meaningful can that test be?
One of the suggestions that they have, if you have a hard time taking the test, is take the test with someone who loves you and knows you well. Because then when you answer the questions, they can give you some mirror reflection on, is that true? Mm-hmm. Like I saw that Lindsay did the test with her kids, and her kids were able to help her figure out that mm-hmm. she was a 9. I can't remember, but she needed more feedback because sometimes we have a hard time seeing it ourselves. So that's another way to, you can act as if you're 22, but if that's not helpful, you can have people you
love.
But
I'm thinking about, what about the kids? The kids aren't 22 yet.
But I guess what I'm saying is you can have your parents take it with you.
Got it.
We can help them see and give them examples.
Got it. I understand. Okay. I thought you meant the other way. Like Lindsay was having a hard time.
Both.
Got it. So, okay.
Okay, question.
We're going to go over to Nikki. Hold on, Nikki. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you. My question happens to tie in, and I didn't think it would, but my daughter's really, what I've been thinking of it as, is magical thinking, in terms of she's talking about, I want to be at school full time, I want to do a full course load, I don't want any supports in place, and I want to take the bus like everybody else and do everything the same way as everybody else.
How old
And this sounds great, of course, but her psychologist is saying it's not safe for her physically or mentally. She's 14, as in that's not the right thing for her. She goes to a health school. She goes to school for 3 subjects a day. That's where she is physically and emotionally. But it's like what you just said in terms of she wants to imitate and she wants to feel normal. So she's prioritizing, she's 14, she's prioritizing how she's seen rather than what's right for her. Mm-hmm. So it's, when you were talking, it was, I would like to help her to focus on making choices that are right for her, that she can be her best self and accept who she is, rather than putting all this energy into imitating how she sees the rest of the world or what she thinks. Because she goes, of course I can take the bus, everyone can take the bus, but when I said to her yesterday, oh, do you want to take the bus to meet your friends, I'll take it to the bus stop, I'll wait till get on, she dissolved because she didn't know who would be on the bus and she didn't know who the bus driver would be, and her thought would sort of run away with it, you know. So yeah, so I'm really just looking for, how do I help with her magical thinking without, I don't want to squash her and I don't want to negate her thoughts. Yeah. Is that enough?
Yes. I have a few things that I can share with that. And I love that you're calling it magical thinking, because that is something we all do, right? It's not, you know, because of the challenges she has, it's very human. We all will say, you know, it's kind of like people who are like, you know, once I get to this place, I'm going to lose 30 pounds and I'm going to work out every day and I am going to go back to school and I'm going to, you know, we all do these like things where we'll create this scenario. So it's very human. That's what we do. And so, but what I would say is that one thing I can say about human beings, all kids and all adults, is they feel most content when they know they have some autonomy and choice. It doesn't matter how old you are, you can be 2 or you can be 80. You want to still believe that you have autonomy and choice. So when she says, I want to go on the bus or I want to do these things, the best way to talk with her about it is, I totally get why. I get that you want to do that. And you know what? Let's continue to you know, do take steps toward things that are important to you, knowing that just you driving her to the bus, even if she melted down and didn't get on, at least gave her a sense of autonomy that she could choose that morning, even if it didn't work. A lot of times we view things in terms of, did it work or didn't it work? Mm-hmm. And we forget that the middle part is we had at least had the option to choose something different. And again, Nikki, that can be exhausting for you as a mom. I don't want to just act as if, oh, that's so simple to be with my child as they melt down. That's hard. And a lot of times we just want to avoid that. But it doesn't have to be about the bus. It could be when she says things like, I want to do things that other people are doing, or I want to do these things. Say, I totally get that. What are some steps that you feel like you could take toward that? And I'll support you. And she may not even do any of them, but talking about them and giving her that ability to keep opening her mind to that idea is the best support you can give her. So it's not about talking her out of it. It's about knowing that she is exactly where she's supposed to be right now. She's in a school situation that keeps her healthy emotionally and physically. So you're not going to pull that away, but all of us have room to expand and try new things. And sometimes just the idea of it, how many of us think about an idea for 2 years before we do it? So I want to get on a bus, may be moving her towards something that she'll do in 2 years mm-hmm. from now. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that it sounds like you are already so supportive to her that you may be doing all these things, but I don't want you to be afraid that she's having magical thinking. Like, don't be worried in the sense of what will this look like. Know that that's a human, that's what our brain does, is I want to expand beyond what I have. And like you said, she's 14. I want to identify with my peers more. Totally normal and valuable. And you don't have to talk her out of it. You don't have to make her feel good about it. You just hear it. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I say that sentence all the time with my kids. I get it. I get it.
Nikki, what are your thoughts?
That's perfect. Thank you. Yeah. There's a couple of lines there that I can use over and over again, and just that steps towards it, and that I get it, and let's work towards that.
Let's work towards it. And give her examples of how you're doing that. You know, like, I know what you mean. I kind of want to do this thing, and I'm going to take a small step toward it, even if it's I just think about it. Because it's not about her having problems. It's about being a human. And that we all, you know, have two steps forward, one step back, one step forward, two, you know, that's what we do. Yeah.
And it's not all or nothing, you know. Yesterday I said, why don't you stay for art class at school?
Yeah.
And so I think that's just validating what I did. She didn't, but right. At least I let her know that that opportunity was there for her. It's not all or nothing. It's not a full course load or a... exactly what she's got now. It's just encouraging her to, yeah, I guess it's feel her, how she's feeling that day.
Exactly. And that it's okay. Like, I think a lot of parents get frustrated, like, well, I keep, and you're not doing this at all, but parents will be like, well, I told them they could go like 10 times and they never did. So what's the point? Tell her 200 times. Cause there's no, it's not a lie. It's, you can always go to art class. She doesn't. But is it true that she can always go? Sure. So be less connected to the outcome as you are and be more open to the ideas, because you never know when she'll take that step. And, you know, you know she has it in her if she wants it. She doesn't need it, but if she wants it, okay.
Sweetie, you just helped Nikki. She came up with a good question. You had a good answer. Notice I didn't say anything because I didn't really have much.
Okay.
She said that that's perfect.
Yeah.
As a two, how do you feel about that?
What I hear when I hear perfect is that was helpful. So I'm glad that it's helpful.
Makes you feel good.
Always.
She's a two.
I mean, and...
So we all like to be helpful, but don't you take more value from it than a seven or a five or something like that?
Yes. I mean, what I take value in is that I when Nikki asks that question, for a moment, I feel what she feels.
I don't, by the way. I don't feel what Nikki is feeling.
I do. I start to breathe a certain way, and I know what she's feeling. And when I say that, I don't mean I know what's going on in your mind. Mm-hmm. I'm not psychic. I'm not clairvoyant. What I mean is I feel the tone of what you're saying. And if I can help her feel calmer in that, then I feel calmer. So there's some selfishness to it in
for
that.
For sure. It
makes
you,
it makes me feel better. But sometimes when people say, does that make you feel better? It sounds like an egoic thing.
Yeah.
It's a physical thing for me. Oh. It's also egoic. I've got an ego, but I feel better when Nikki says, oh, I can use that. Then my body goes, mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe we're now.
Well, and real quick, and we talked about this, I think, on the podcast, but like, you know, let's just use Nikki as an example. You felt her.
Uh-huh.
I didn't. I went into my head.
You went to your head.
Quickly, like, what can I say to help her? And I think you gave her a better answer than I would have came up with from my brain. But this is the empathy part. So like, if Kathy's having a bad day and she's telling me some of her stuff, it's harder for me to tap into the emotion, the feeling of it. That doesn't excuse my behavior, but it's just not as accessible to me as it is to her. If the roles were reversed, if I come home, I have a bad day, Kathy's feeling me. When she comes home and has a bad day, I'm in my head. The reason I bring that up is for all of you guys that have partners or kids or whatever, it's just to have a little understanding helps you have compassion for the other. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's all.
All right. It's 1 o'clock.
It's one bell. So I'm going to, do you have any closing thoughts, my darling?
Just that get your tickets for the conference, because we're going to have a really limited early bird. We're not going to do early bird till December. We're only going to do it for like 3 weeks, maybe. I don't know. We have a meeting on Tuesday. So if you're coming, get your tickets. If say you figure out closer to the day that you can't come, we'll refund your money. You're on Team Zen. You know, don't sweat it. Like go toward it.
You're a VIP.
Yeah, you're a VIP. Go toward it. And if something happens, you just let us know. You know us. But you know, do your best to go toward it rather than say, I hope I can go. Just do it. And then if it doesn't work out, let us know. And like I said, sign up for the pre-conference workshop. If your partner's coming, sign up for Todd's pre-conference workshop. It's going to be good. It's going to be Todd and Frank, mm-hmm. who is his partner in the tribe. So you get a really good, it's going
to
be great.
And so I unmuted everybody. So to say, to sign off, why don't we all say goodbye? Like say it for real out loud.
Bye, everybody. Bye, everybody. Love you.
Nobody.
Well, it's, there's
bye.
A
time.
There it is. Found it. All right, guys.
Bye, guys.
See you later. Adios.
Bye.
There's like a 2-second delay.